story time. The time during the week where we talk about what happened during our campaign. Our favorite moments, what we learned about ourselves, and what we learned about each other. Please join us now as we enjoy story time.
So for this week with story time, we are going to be talking about the adventures on the Salarian Islands. And last time we left off, we had met Ashtar Vesh again, and she had explained to the group, although my character Magalath has no idea what's going on, which is really interesting going forward with what we're doing now, that they are reincarnated heroes from old, and that in the past they fought this demon Alzog, and now, once again, we have, by fate or whatever you want to call it, we've united as a group, we've found each other, and she showed us that in the past we had these really powerful magical weapons. And so with each of our characters, we got to look at our other selves and what we looked like in this fiery magic and the weapon, and Magalath has no idea who this person is that's in front of him. He does not understand. He likes the cool fiery maul that's in front of him, but so this time we went to the island of Pohi, where Howie Chuchip and the Camilo brothers are from, a island that is very, very much mostly just woods.
And the forest is very much enshrouded in mystery. Like, there, yeah. People go in and they come out babbling, and sometimes they don't even come out. Like, it's just a very notorious place for messing with the people that go into it.
So we went to where we had our contacts with the bounty list, and we're about to go to the other island. And of course, once again, Chris drops in one of his underwater traveling vessels, and Magalath won't get on, and eventually they convinced Magalath to get on, which, even with convincing him to get on, I was like, I don't know if you wanna, like, he's got a hammer. As soon as he starts sinking, he's gonna be flipping out, and that's exactly what he did. He started flipping out and tried to get out, tried to open the door while you were underwater to get out.
Yeah, there's a point in time where your constitution just doesn't hold up well enough when you're in this place that makes you very, very uncomfortable. And that's very much an understatement for Magalath. Like, he just started freaking out hardcore, and like, he had to get restrained at one point. Like, you got knocked out. Like, you were being grappled by a bunch of people.
Caesar knocked me out from behind. It took him two or three hits to the head, which basically was like Magalath saying, like, I'll get you back for this.
Yep.
But you guys kept on, like, you tied me up. You made sure you chained me up because I could probably try to break through some ropes. And eventually, after a couple days of Magalath freaking out on the ship, we got to the island of Pohi and to the city of Pymor, and we get out to the other end where this underwater dock is with the bounty list. And once again, we had a little bit of a group grappling match and fighting, and I think I nearly killed Caesar, but
Caesar got a few good hits on you, and you were like, oh, he actually hits harder than what I thought he did.
I said that once he was unconscious, but
it was this really interesting moment where it was like people were choosing sides within the group, like, who do I side with in this moment? Like, what is going, but it was all in good fun, right? It was all just like, this is the way this ragtag group of people,
as players, it was all in good fun. But it was funny because after this fight, Magalath walked away with a little bit more respect for Caesar because he hit harder than he expected. Caesar has no clue about that because he was unconscious. But it did kind of put a little tension between Zyvir and Caesar, because Zyvir stuck up for Magalath,
right?
And Caesar didn't like that. And once again, it was not player tension, but the PC tension was a little bit higher there. But it's kind of funny how every time we see one of those underwater vessels, it begins a fight.
Yeah, it is really interesting. And so you guys decided that, you know what, we're heading out into this very mysterious forest that three of the people are from this island, Howie, Caesar, and Hanta. They're all from this island originally. So there was this moment of like, okay, it's very murky out there. Like, it's weird. We don't know exactly what's going on out there. Do they think they know this place well enough to not have to hire a guide, because a guide could be a really useful thing out in these forests. Here's these plants to avoid. Don't touch those. Here's these plants that you can eat. Here's these trees that you can sleep in for the night. Here's the waters to avoid. Things like that, that, you know, the Camilo brothers aren't from this area. They're not from this section of the forest. Mm-hmm. And so it might be drastically different than where they're from. And they might not know the things that are around them.
They might know their forest like the back of their hand, but they don't know the dangers and the twists and the turns that this forest around them.
Right.
And I imagine because they know their forest and they know the dangers that are in their forest, that would lead them to even more so be like, this could be dangerous because we don't know what lurks around here, or we won't know a good way to get away from the dangers.
But is that what happened?
No, we didn't take a guide. Not at all.
Yeah. Everybody was like, no, we got this. We got this. So you guys stocked up on a couple of different potions and things like that, got some items before you left, some traveling gear essentially is what it was. And when you exited out of the bounty list, there out in the middle of the forest from the city, you could see these twin peaks that you were heading to, jutting out of the forest, just out in the middle of them. They're the only two mountains that are there. Kind of like the Lonely Mountain in The Hobbit, but there was two of them. Not a part of a mountain range or anything. They were just there. And so you guys decided to travel out into the forest that turns people insane from time to time. And you guys eventually stumbled across these plants. Luckily enough, Caesar and Hanta had recognized these plants before, and good thing they did. They were called the Stinging Hearts. And they essentially would have done some really massive damage to you guys. They have little spikes that stick in and do a large amount of damage. And there's like some really cool properties to these things that unfortunately you guys won't get to experience. And they wouldn't have been fun and cool for you anyways.
Oh, we won't get another chance. Okay, so explain to me what would have happened had we not seen these.
Yeah, so these plants essentially have really, really small needles that would stick into your characters, and they would do a ton of damage to you right away because they do like poison damage and things like this. So the plant, as a defense mechanism, turns brown and wilts because all of its needles are gone, right? These needles are still in you guys. You think they go away, they stop doing damage to you. Well, they have this delayed effect. This is all just a camouflage of this plant that 2 weeks later they end up doing that same amount of damage out of the middle of nowhere. So it could be at a really unopportune time when you're talking to somebody, just all of a sudden taking this massive amount of damage. And when you take that damage again after the 2 weeks, the plant has had time to regrow new needles, and it springs back up to life again and is a plant out in the middle of the forest, ready to sting again whatever comes past it. So that's what you guys missed. It would have made for some really fun role-playing moments later when you're in the middle of a battle with Alzog or something, and all of a sudden you take massive amounts of damage.
2 weeks
and
later,
over.
We're going to be in a battle with Alzog? Wow, we're quick.
Depending on how fast you get everything done, yeah. But so that's what you guys avoided, and thankfully so. And you guys maneuvered around like some cool Venus flytrap things that could have attacked you, and various different other things that you may still encounter on your way back after what happens, but we'll get to that. So you guys get to the Twin Peaks, and you find this cave entrance that Ashtar was telling you about, and you guys decide to travel inside of this cave. And what did you guys run into inside of this cave, Mitch?
So at a very inopportune moment, we are crossing one of those classic rickety wooden rope bridges, and we get to the point where we can see the other side, and two creatures that looked like stones start standing up, and they're completely look like they're made of stone. They're monsters that are made of stone. I knew exactly what these were because we had just recently talked about them. You had brought them up and how cool you thought they were because you looked at them for a future episode of the DMB. You'll see them come up in a future episode of the DMB, the Galeb Dur. And so when you started describing these things and they rose up immediately, I was like, oh boy, I know exactly what is going to happen. And just like clockwork, all of a sudden whether they raise their hands or make some sort of gesture or just stare at us, the rocks around us start forming into very similar monsters. And then we were fighting now we're fighting six rock monsters. And of course, Maglath isn't smart, and I'm not going to try and metagame So we start fighting the ones that have been created from the original Gale of Dor. I was surprised that nobody else went, we should attack the original ones.
Right,
like,
yeah.
But nobody else like did that. So we are attacking the original ones. And then the Gale of Dor that rose the other ones up, they're just chilling in the background waiting for the other ones to kill
us. Well, they moved just far enough back that people with dark vision couldn't see them if there was a little bit of light. And so it was this moment of like, yeah, why is nobody going after them? Like, that's very strange.
Yeah.
And there was also this moment, and I tried to make it clear when, like, Jason would attack with magic that he was doing more damage than what everybody else was doing because they have resistance to bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing from non-magical
weapons.
That's
crazy to me. Like, I didn't know that, but I would have, like, if I would have thought that these things were resistance to piercing and slashing, but bludgeoning too, that's pretty nuts. I did not expect that.
Yep. And so it was one of these moments that I'm like, wow, this battle's taking a lot longer than what I thought it was. Man. All right, well, we just spent an hour and a half fighting these things doing the same thing over and over again. But it was this moment of like, all right, you finally got to the point where you could attack these things, and you finally defeated the two that had created more of these rocks around them. And you all of a sudden heard something coming from down the hallway that did not sound very friendly, if you remember right.
At this point, we're really, really hurt. Hanta has fallen to the ground. He's unconscious. We don't have...
I believe Maglath wasn't looking very good either at this point.
Yeah, well, Maglath, who can take a lot of damage, is not looking good. There were quite a few of us that were really banged up, and Hanta's down, and we're like, somebody give him a health potion or something, and nobody has any.
Right,
like,
yeah.
So Maglath hears the sound of something big coming, and although Maglath doesn't like running from a fight, he picks up Hanta and throws him over his shoulder. He picks up Hound, and he starts booking it across the bridge, and that kind of led to all the other characters going, all right, we need to go. And so we all ran across the bridge, and we heard from the other side of the bridge something stop, and like we hear it grunting, and it sounded like it was moving things around, but it didn't pursue us. Whether it couldn't either jump the gap or cross the bridge or whatever it was, it did not pursue us.
Yeah, you heard a big boulder come flying through and crash into the room right before he came in as well. And it was just this moment of like, we're pretty weak. We don't want to fight anything else that's big because we'll probably die if it's anything like this last battle. And so you guys went back to, I don't remember if you walked out of the cave.
I think we slept right in the entrance of the cave, and we just kind of set up camp and rested up.
Right, because you kind of figured that whatever was chasing you couldn't get to you, or, you know, couldn't track you or whatever it was. It just didn't follow. So you guys,
if it was going to follow us, we figured it would have followed us at that point. So there might be something else that sneaks up on us, but we'll keep somebody on watch, and hopefully it won't be that thing.
Right, and so you guys decided to get up again, and you know, where that bridge was, you could have either gone to the left or gone across the bridge. And everybody was like, well, there's something big down there. This is probably what's guarding the weapons that we need. And so you guys scaled the little embankment that was up to this hallway, and you came up around this hallway. And what did you guys see when you entered into this room? You heard some cattle mooing and some sheep, you know, making their noises. And you saw a big fire that was casting a shadow. And what was that shadow of?
There is this huge cyclops inside of this room, and he's just sitting at this fire, and he's reaching down, and he's plucking up sheep, and just like one open mouth, shoving the sheep in his mouth, crunching them. You can hear the sheep dying, and it's terrible. And he's just sitting, and behind his back are the two daggers that are Caesar's past lives daggers hanging on this wall.
Yeah, they're the daggers of Ilildor is what they were called, that Ashtar sent you here for. They were jet black. They were made of this volcanic glass known as, I mean, anybody that's played Skyrim has probably heard of obsidian before. They were these jet black daggers that were hanging from the wall behind him. And Caesar knew right away, these are the things that we're looking for. We have to go and get these things. And so he cast invisibility on himself, and I'm pretty sure he cast spider climb on himself, and he started scaling the walls. And immediately I was like, oh man, didn't think about that. Well, we shouldn't make this easy for him. And he went up and grabbed the daggers, and I was like trying to figure out something on the fly, like what spell can I put on this thing? And I was like, oh, alarm sounds good. And afterwards, I thought, I was like, alarm is the dumbest spell to have in this place. Like it doesn't, like, you could have come up with something cooler than that on the fly, DM. Come on. Like, it could have had like some like trigger that has a spike that comes out and skewers them on the wall.
Hey,
like,
what are you gonna do? Sometimes as DMs, we're put in a tough corner.
Oh, yeah.
And that's improv, right? You pull something out and you might have regrets, and then you might be like, ah, that could have been better. Yeah. But
the best part was it didn't hinder the story at all afterwards. Yeah. It made it much more interesting because at that point in time, he's still invisible. The Cyclops has no idea where these things are coming, like what happened. He just knows that the weapons are gone. Everybody's like casting minor illusion to hide behind a boulder. They're all hiding.
Nobody tells Maglath that they're hiding, which I'm fine with because Maglath was sick and tired of this sneaking around. He's feeling good again. And so they're all hiding behind fake boulders that they've cast illusions of. And Maglath just stands in the path with his maul, and he sees this Cyclops that is a lot bigger than what I thought he was. I thought he was a large creature, but he's a huge creature.
Yeah, yep.
He comes stumbling out, and I'm just like, come at me, one eye. and we go blow for blow, and it is just like, I mean, Maglath is a barbarian, so he's able to have resistance. So he's having each of these hits, but it still is equating to like each hit is like, oh, 28 damage. So he has that, and only 25 damage this time. And so he's getting hit and hit and hit. And I just imagine it being like a cartoonish, like the club comes down, smashes him into a pancake, lifts up, and he like pops up like a slinky and then attacks again.
Yeah, well, the Cyclops have multi-attack. They have two Great Club attacks, and the Great Clubs are 3d8 plus 6. So it's like you're still taking a lot of damage because you're the person drawing the attacks.
I've rolled really well for health with Maglath, which is the opposite of, unfortunately, what Sanjan has rolled in my campaign.
Right.
So I was really happy that I was able to, this entire battle, it got to the point where it was like, all right, one more hit, and I'm going down. But I was able to take all the hits, but it was just like, this is the most I've seen my health go down, 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 down. And thankfully, as soon as I started fighting this thing, all the people who are hiding behind these fake rocks, they pop out and they start like attacking this thing as well. So we were able, this was a much quicker battle than the Galeb Dor.
Right.
But we were able to take him down, but it got scary for a second there when I kept on dropping, and I was like, you guys are going to come out here and help me, right?
Right.
As much as I can take a few hits from this thing, I don't think I'm going to bring it down by myself. Yeah. So
it was a very, I think for Maglath, this was kind of the first night where there was a really big challenge against him and his physical stature. Like it was
mostly due to the fact that the rest of the group hid.
Right.
But and it was fun. Like, and I was like, well, am I going to take reckless attack and give him advantage on all hits against me? And I'm like, I want all hits against him to be advantage. So and that's how Maglath fights. So I'm rolling with advantage, he's rolling advantage on me, and it was a rough one. He's never been hurt that much, but it was it was good. We triumphed.
Yep, and so you guys got the daggers. Like when Caesar touched these daggers, he noticed that there were these deep blue veins that kind of shot through the daggers as well. Like it was almost as if something was activated when he touched them. And when he sliced across the back of this thing, it left deep blue cuts. Like the outside of the cuts left deep, like a light bluish color around where they scarred over. And Jared knows what they do now, and they basically do extra cold damage against creatures and against demons. They pack a little bit more of a punch because that was what they were specifically focused for. So you guys decided to leave at that point in time. You're walking back towards the city of Primor, and somebody that is a familiar face shows up behind you guys.
Who is it? But it's Ashtar Vesh, and she says, well done, and good job for doing this. And we're all like, why did you help us?
Yeah, where did you come from? Why didn't you help us? Like, what is going on?
But she shows up, and she shows a fiery image of, to Maglath's delight, although he still has no idea what the heck is going on, a fiery maul, which is the maul of Uther, who, once again, Maglath has no idea about this, but Uther was Maglath in a past life. And so our next item to go after is the Maul of Uther, which I'm really excited about. And so is Magleth. He has no idea why, but fiery, cool looking Maul. He's cool with it. He's happy.
Yep. And so it's whether or not it's actually fiery because...
Yeah. The image is fiery. So Magleth is expecting a fiery Maul.
I just imagine this moment, like when Magleth sees the Maul, it's going to be like, oh, that's not as cool.
Not as cool. He might not do that. He might just be like, this is not the Maul we're looking
for. Yeah, right. These are not the Mauls you are looking for. And so, yeah, Ashtar told you, all right, the next place that you need to go to is in the middle of the Hidden Lake. And so you don't know what that means. You just know you have to go back to the island where all of the mayhem started for you.
Of course we do.
Yep. And fortunately, it's not by the main city where everybody's looking for you. But
if this stinking Astrovest sends us off to island after island instead of just being like, oh, there's two on Pohi, let's go after those two. Megalas might track her down and punch her in the face.
Yeah, because he's got to get back on the underwater vessels every single time. Yep.
He's still not happy with it.
And so she disappeared into a swarm of crows at that point, or a murder of crows, whatever they're called, and flew off. You didn't know where she went. She just flew off above the forest and disappeared from your sight. And you guys were left there like, all right, guess that's the next thing we have to do. Let's get going. And you started heading back to the city of Primor. And that's where we left off. So you'll have to come back again for another story time in 2 weeks when we continue the story of the adventure on the Salarian Islands. We will see you then.
Thanks for listening to this week's story time. We hope you've enjoyed these moments from our campaigns, stories about our characters, and what they have done within our world. We hope that you have enjoyed your time here, and we hope that you come back again next week for another edition of Storytime. Thank you.